Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I am Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. What is up, boys?
The vibes are slightly less immaculate, but they're still fine.
Yeah, a little bit lower on the vibe scale right now.
I think it's probably good that we're recording this on Wednesday, so we've had a couple of days to process the 1-1 draw at Southampton last weekend, because maybe the mood would be a bit more gloomy if we recorded this Monday or if we just recorded it right after. But it seems like, you know, with how much this game has already been processed by the massive expanded Manchester United universe in every corner of the internet and social media, the problems that we saw in midfield are not new. And as disheartening as maybe that is, at least the problem is identified to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say any processing I needed to do post-match before coming into doing the pod was actually all related to the wider, MUFC, EU. I don't know. A lot of people were getting off some super hot takes. You know, not even 7 days after we had just pumped Leeds 5-1. This is a team that is also coming off a second place finish. And you would have thought we got relegated when we drew Southampton 1-1 on the road in Southampton's first game, you know, back having full capacity fans. The away streak that we enjoyed last year is not going to be the same this year, because I think at least in the early part of the season, you're going to have a lot more teams fired up and they're going to be, you know, really buoyed by the home crowd. And on top of that too, guess what? You know, Leeds put out game tape on us. So Southampton was able to exploit some things. And guess what? We still don't have the midfield figured out, which is something that we've been crying about since before the Leeds game, before the end of last year, during last year, before the start of last year, during Project Restart. Project Restart
was like the one time we weren't complaining about it.
Yeah, the vibes were pretty good. Polly, but I wanted to put this to you after reading your tactical analysis. You mentioned how at times Manchester United looked complacent on the ball. Do you think that that's just something that is a familiar problem with Manchester United trying to break down teams in possession, which is something that we're notably not very good at? Or do you think that it's something deeper with the midfield problem, or like you mentioned in the tactical analysis, maybe it's just getting used to playing in high energy games again?
I don't think it's a problem in terms of trying to break teams down, because it's when you're breaking teams down, they give you that time and space. And we were playing as if we had, like, part of it is just not pushing to tempo. And it was everybody. You got the ball forward to Martial and he pulled it back on, you know, he's running and then he pulls it back onto his right foot and tries to turn around as if, like, I'm going to look up and survey the scene. And a guy runs right behind him and takes the ball. A few minutes before that, Greenwood pulls the ball back to Juan Bissaka, who plays it in for Fred, who looks up to look around the field, and a midfielder comes from behind him and grabs the ball. And it just never occurred to these guys that someone might be coming from behind you, because Southampton were running and closing everything down. Early on in the match, or several times, we saw balls being played where either a Pogba or a Martial or a Matic or anyone were just standing there waiting for the ball to come to them, and Southampton's defender would be like, "Nah, I'm going to run in front of you and I'm going to block it." And it was like, you remember when you hear coaches say, "Come to the ball," and we were waiting for the ball to get to us. But then at the back, you'd see Southampton were not pressuring, and you'd see Maguire and Lindelof and Shaw and Matic, and they'd just be walking up the pitch. And that's part of the thing, is when you do that, you're letting Southampton set up, you're letting the defense get set, and you're not playing to that tempo, and you're trying to slow things down, and everybody's going to slow down. And one of the things that I worried about going into Project Restart, when we were going to start playing all these empty stadium games, was, are we going to play too slow? And the tempo with an empty stadium. And I remember in that first home match, against Sheffield United. At one point, Bruno got the ball in the middle of the – towards the end of the first half and just kind of did a – all right, everybody, slow it down, like relax here. And it was like he was walking the ball up the pitch and it did nothing. And then like a minute or so later, United pushed the ball up the pitch and scored. So, yeah, it was weird. It's not the first time we've seen this from United. Now, I can't sit here and tell you and bring up examples of times post-project restart that I remembered this happening because I probably wasn't paying attention to it enough, and I don't know for a fact if it did happen, but it definitely was something that happened all season last year. I think because Leeds play in that frenetic way and Ollie played all of his high-energy guys, McTominay, Fred, Daniel James, you weren't going to get that kind of reaction against Leeds. But as soon as you got out there against Southampton, you've got your more possession-focused guys out there, it seeped in, and it's something to watch going forward.
So bringing up the midfield again, this is something we've talked about plenty enough already, so I wanted to ask if those – was really something we wanted to talk about more, since there has been sort of developing transfer news this week regarding the midfield problem area. I guess needing to know whether we actually have anything new to say about this or not.
Well, yeah, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating because, like Nathan said, Leeds put out a playbook on us, but it wasn't Leeds. Like, we've seen this happen so many times. We saw it happen against Chelsea last year at home. We saw it happen against West Brom away. We saw it happen to an extent. We saw it happen in a different way against West Ham away last year. We saw it happen in the Europa League final. In the West Ham and the Europa League situation, and this is why the Pogba McTominay pair doesn't work as well as it should, is because in those situations they just crash on Pogba. They put two or three guys on him and they leave McTominay wide open and say, hey, you give him the ball, let him beat us. But we've seen it when Matic and Fred play as a pair. And we saw it in the other games listed where other teams just say, instead of pressing these guys, because they are very good at – McTominay is very good at moving the ball quickly into space so somebody can run onto it. And Fred's really good at making quick passes through the lines if you're disjointed. So instead of – they are a very press-resistant pair, which is why they are so effective, or the most effective that we have, against the top teams. Instead of pressing them, I don't know why everybody doesn't do it, has just said, no, we're just going to back off and we're going to double-cover Bruno, and we're going to double-cover Pogba, and we're going to cover Luke Shaw. And now we're just going to make you guys hold the ball and pick out a pass, and they can't do that. And whether it's McTominay, whether it's Fred, whether it's Matic, Donny van de Beek is not a passer. We haven't been able to do that. So it's been screaming at us, we need a midfielder. And I think the fans have this idea of like, oh, just bring in a destroyer who could screen the back and we could play Pogba and Bruno in midfield. And that's not how it's going to work. And that wouldn't work at all either. And nor would you want to do that. You kind of want Bruno to be playing where he is, because that's where he's most effective. And clearly Pogba was very effective in this role. You have destroyers. Fred gets up the pitch and breaks up attacks far up the pitch very, very well. McTominay is very good at not letting you do what you want to do. You need a passer so that someone can play next to them and funnel the ball to Bruno and to Pogba in areas where Bruno and Pogba and Mason Greenwood and Jadon Sancho and Marcus Rashford can be effective. And United just haven't seemed to do it. And the big thing that I saw yesterday was, it seems like, oh, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer knows that it's a problem, and like he has to, because he's smarter than the three of us and he's been watching this team. It's about convincing the Glazers to spend more money in a transfer window, where now it looks like City and Chelsea are ramping up even more and the pressure is on even higher. But if that's the case, then I think it's fair to question, why wasn't a midfielder prioritized over Rafael Varane if you knew that you only had enough money to make two signings? Because it seems like United kind of knew this going in. And I understand that Rafael Varane is an opportunity. He's a world-class defender, and they don't come on the market too often. And at that price, we spoke about this when the deal happened, at that price, that's an absurdly good price, and it does change things, or it throws more variables into the equation. But I think it's still fair to question, should a midfielder have been prioritized over Rafael Varane? Does Rafael Varane make this team that much better than a midfielder would have and no Rafael Varane?
Nathan?
I mean, I think... I know I always felt, because I actually rate Lindelof. I know a lot of people are quick to kind of poo-poo on him. I always felt like midfielder was more important. If the assertion from Pauly is correct, I think the idea of if we had to prioritize one or the other because you had this many dollars and you couldn't spend over that, then midfielder felt more glaring because at the end of the day, if you get your midfielder right, it provides extra protection for your center backs that you may or may not rate as much as that you'd like. And we do have a bunch of center backs like on the payroll. Let's not forget, we've got Eric Bailly, we got, Phil Jones. I mean, there's people there. No Twan Zabi, he's on loan now. So goodbye, Sweet Prince. I don't know.
But I think it's fair to say Twan Zabi wouldn't be on loan if Varane wasn't coming in.
That is correct as well. No, and the midfield, that's the thing, because it's like Fred and Scott do a pretty good job. I mean, they were able to, we survived the McFred pivot and finished second. So they clearly have some talent in what they do. The problem is if that ball needs to go anywhere other than, to the side or backwards, that's when we run into issues. And so, like Pauly said, the progressive passer is the thing that we've been desperate for. It's what Carl said and what Brent said when we were sitting there lamenting over how, we're missing Michael Carrick, and like now Michael Carrick's on staff, and God forbid if we could get somebody that could be, Michael Carrick Jr. and learn from Michael Carrick, might be pretty sick for us. So.
And yeah. You don't need a guy that's going to come in and get a lot of interceptions and make a lot of tackles. Carrick didn't do that. Nemanja Matic doesn't do that. And Nemanja Matic is very much considered a defensive midfielder. And when he plays, we don't concede many chances. He reads the game well. He's very good at getting in your way and not letting you come up the middle and just forcing you to go somewhere else with the ball where my teammates are there and they're going to win the ball back from you. The problem with asking this question is that you two agree with me, because I did tweet this last night. So I don't get any pushback. I did tweet this last night, and I got killed on the bird because everybody was yelling at me like, oh, well, center back was an issue and center back was a need, et cetera. We can't have multiple needs. And it's like, no, we do have multiple needs. We needed a right winger. We needed a center back. We need a midfielder. It's literally just becomes about priority. And what do you prioritize? The right wing was a desperate need, and Jadon Sancho makes us better. Full stop. So you spend money there. And then it's about, all right, if you only have money for one more signing, then it's about prioritizing. What is more important right now? If you have money for all three, then it doesn't matter what order you bring them in as long as you get it done. But if no one leaves, right now it's looking like we only have money for two. And I'll give you a Carl Anka-like analogy. It's, imagine I have a cell phone and I need to upgrade my cell phone. I need to upgrade on my computer. It's old. It's working, but it's old. But also I have shitty internet at my house. I got to either change I got to change the provider, upgrade the speed. And I only have money to do two of them this year. So the phone, non-starter, it's too old, and non-starter, that one we buy. Now the question is, do I upgrade my internet or do I get a new computer? But then Colin comes at me and he goes, well, I have this MacBook Pro. It's state of the art. It's the best one they released, but it's 2 years old, but it still works really well. It's still really good. It's newer than yours. It's better. It is a clear upgrade on the computer that you have. And it was $2,000, but I'm going to sell it to you for $400. And all being said, the internet would cost me $500 over the course of the year, but I can't spend $900 this year. Do I take the computer where all of a sudden that slow internet might cause me to have the same problems? Like, we're lagging on I can't watch videos. Or it's lagging when I'm trying to do too many things online. Or do I upgrade the internet and by extension, my old computer, which is still getting the job done, all of a sudden now, because the internet's faster, it's not lagging online anymore. And it's like, hey, I can use this for another year. So to me, it's upgrade the internet. And that's midfield. Victor Lindelof, as Nathan said, Victor Lindelof is good enough. How many of McTominay, Matic, and Fred are good enough? And if the answer isn't three, or at the very least two, you need someone else there. And right now we didn't have it. And you look at the games that we dropped last year, and how many of them were because we conceded too many goals versus how many of them were because we couldn't score enough.
So two things.
What, Nathan, kind of computer?
that's an analogy I think we can clip and use on Twitter.
I'm not going to lie to you, we should just go back to doing cross sports references.
Second thing, Manchester United are going to play West Ham in the third round of the Carabao Cup. So that is. Do they have the date for that yet?
Yeah, the week of September 20th, which means we're playing West Ham twice in a week.
Ah, great. That'll be.
This is breaking news on a podcast. Shout out to us.
Yeah. If we had a producer, we would have some like sound effect or something, but it's me.
We're not live. Yeah. Like, this gets edited afterwards, so you could add
post production, dog. But you're gonna keep this part in now because we're roasting you.
Yeah. So I had something on Varane, and now I've forgotten it because too much has happened.
Not to harp on my big analogy.
Right. So. I do think that Varane is an upgrade on Lindelof, and I think that as much as I like Lindelof, there are weaknesses that he brought that were exposed at times over the last couple of seasons. But for the most part, you are correct, Polly, that was probably fourth or fifth, I think, on our needs or list of needs going into the summer. I do like that we have Varane. We haven't seen him and Maguire play yet. He's somebody who can defend at a high line, but I think it's kind of overlooked now and definitely is a part of the constant criticism we saw of Harry Maguire and Victor Lindelof over the past couple of seasons, that playing defender in this day and age is really hard at such a high level as well, because you're expected to police a certain area that normally you would have midfield help with. And with the way that we like to play against some teams, you know, Harry Maguire is moving up into midfield and in some cases charging into the attacking third. And that has become part of the expectation for our center backs to be able to do that, as well as play long balls and, you know, contribute and build up play. So
The Athletic actually wrote a really good piece about this either this week or last week. It's about the evolution of the modern striker and how, like, we just don't really have those classic number nines anymore. And even the most classic number nine you have in Harry Kane is a player who loves to drop deep and drop into space, and how difficult it is for defenders. And they spoke to a guy who played for like City and Bolton and Blackburn, like those teams from 2002 to 2014 or something like that. So that era of the Premier League. And he was saying, like, you know, I'd much rather a striker just be sitting on my shoulder the entire game and you try to ping balls into him and I'm just dealing with him in the air. It's like, I'm like, yeah, no kidding. And that's why teams aren't going in that direction anymore, because it's very easy for defenders. Now with these front threes, like Liverpool, like with Firmino dropping off and Salah and Mane and the way City play, and even United to an extent with the way that they keep moving, it's very difficult for defenders. And Victor Lindelof is actually very good at defending the more modern strikers. He's not as good at defending the more physically robust, put in the box and he's going to beat you in the air striker, which we saw against West Brom. Rafael Varane is good at the two of them. So it's not like, you're 100% right. Like, Rafael Varane makes the defense better and he makes the back line better. But like, if you put Rafael Varane in the team on Sunday, Are we winning that game against Southampton? No. Same result.
Here comes a cross sports reference. I thought of one.
Oh, yes.
So this is a lot like how the NFL is recently modernized, where we're less relying on the big bruising running backs. And so you're seeing defenses go away from having the big giant middle linebackers to stuff the runs. And instead, more money's going to athletic cornerbacks. More money's going to physical safeties. Guys who probably should have bulked up in bed middle linebackers 10 years ago are now playing in more coverage, and either they're outside linebackers or they're a lot sleeker middle linebackers who would have been a safety, you know, 15 years ago. So there's my cross sport reference. And
yeah, you're also seeing, I mean, we're going to get too much into American football probably, but you're seeing like safeties and cornerbacks kind of being play callers on defense now as well, whereas typically that was like a linebacker duty.
The
game continues to evolve, and Lindelof is very good there. Yeah. There are times where, look, yeah, if Rafael Varane is playing against West Brom, we probably win that game 1-0 because he doesn't get beat the way Lindelof got beat. But West Brom scored that goal 2 minutes into the game. United had 88 minutes to score two goals against a team that got relegated and couldn't do it. Like, that's a failure on the midfield who just didn't create it, who couldn't push the ball forward and create any chances.
Wait, are you saying we should have prioritized midfielder over center back?
I'm saying 100%. And I understand that Rafael Varane being available for $34 million does change things, because the opportunity like that does not come all the time. But I think you bring in a midfielder, you'd be surprised how much better the defense gets, and either Rafael Varane is available for free next year, or there's someone else. Like, there are going to be other good defenders. The way that everybody constantly – people make, oh, well, if he's not available next year, well, guess what? Like, Rafael Varane is going to get old at a certain point, as will Harry Maguire, as will Virgil van Dijk, and they won't be as good. And guess what? There will be new defenders that are the best defenders in the world. So if we missed out on a year of Rafael Varane, or we missed out on getting Varane for a cheap price in a move that ultimately made our team better, like, you can find another center back next season.
Yeah. I was going to try and think of a segue to bring this into the Wolves game, but I don't really have one, so we're just going to dive right into it. Wolves is a team that we usually dread going into playing, and that was the Nuno Espirito Santo era. But now they have Bruno Laga, and they've lost their first two games 1-0. Bruno Laga is from Benfica, so similar Portuguese managerial mold as Nuno. Question for me, as somebody who did not watch the first two Wolves games of the season, is this the same Wolves, or is this Wolves a little bit more open to, you know, attack?
As someone who wants to watch the Wolves Tottenham game but hasn't had a chance to, because, well, I won't get into the reason why I want to, but I looked at the numbers in that game, and you all of a sudden look and you go, whoa, Wolves had 57% of possession, and Wolves were very attacking here, and Tottenham like kind of just picked them off and got that counterattack. And yeah, this isn't Nuno's Wolves. They did win 4-0 yesterday in the League Cup, but I didn't check who played. This isn't Nuno's Wolves, but I also was just thinking, like, yes, we are programmed to think, oh, Wolves, bad, annoying, etc., because the year of 2020 saw United play Wolves, what, like 17 times and score one goal? Think about it. Wolves got those two wins in the space of 2 weeks when everything was falling apart for United in 2019. And since then, I think they've scored two goals. Again, they've scored two goals against United and haven't won a game. So, like, United haven't won all their games either, but I fancy us against Wolves. I don't think this is as good of a Wolves side, and I don't think it's as difficult. It will be as difficult to break down. It won't be as stingy and as boring as previous. As the last 2 years of Wolves. One of those games where we won, we played with our reserves.
You know, one way for us to hurt Wolves even more would be to announce Ruben Neves before the game.
So he can't play for us, but he can't play for them either.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the like 10-minute extended highlights of Leicester beating Wolves, and it wasn't really a game that Wolves were out of, but it also wasn't a game where they just kind of ate up space and told them to come at them. You know, it was a game where to some extent it looked like the ball was going up and down the pitch a little bit, which, I mean, playing against a team that traditionally is a low block team, it could be very welcome, especially after witnessing the other spectrum of Bruno Fernandes last weekend, where he got very frustrated and made a lot of mistakes and didn't really influence the game that much.
That was an underrated part of the game that nobody's talked about, is Bruno got frustrated early and played like frustrated Bruno.
Yeah. Well, both Bruno and Fred got really frustrated with the referee, and it kind of affected Bruno more.
Like, Bruno's game drops significantly when he gets frustrated. I mean, you could say this is because Fred's game doesn't have anywhere to drop, but or because the mountains and valleys are not so drastic with Fred. But Bruno, when he gets frustrated, his game drops, and that's very much what happened on Sunday.
But against Wolves, a team that might offer us a little bit more space, possibly a chance for Bruno Fernandes to bounce back and be more like hat-trick Bruno Fernandes than giving the ball away Bruno Fernandes.
We like hat-trick Bruno.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, you watched that against Leicester. Factor in them. Leicester ain't that good. They're good, but like, they also just got carved apart by West Ham. And
yeah, they got whacked.
Yeah, and this is my, like, I've been on this hill for a couple years now, that like, Leicester just aren't that good. They're good. They're not like, oh, like, there's a reason that they've crashed out of the top four at the last minute two years run.
Are Leicester frauds?
Yeah.
To bring it back to like American sports, let's do this like first take bit. Are Leicester City frauds?
Brendan Rodgers, get that guy out of here. I mean, you know, Brendan Rodgers, semi-known for teams falling apart towards the end of the season. But
is Brendan Rodgers the Mike D'Antoni of Premier League coaching?
Mike D'Antoni's a good one. I was going to say Marvin Lewis.
I feel like we're about to bring this up to Brent, and his head's going to spin around.
We'll ask Brent who the Eric Spoelstra of the Premier League is.
Ooh, that'd be a good one. Yeah.
All right. Unless we have any more predictions for Wolves, I think that'll probably do it for this episode. We will be back tomorrow to preview the Champions League group stage after Manchester United's group of death will be revealed to us.
The lottery gods have never shined on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but you look at the way that the pots are this year, and you're like, how bad could this be?
Yeah, I mean, we're not gonna get was it PSG and Real Madrid are not possibilities for us. I mean, actually, I'd kind of be okay with playing Real Madrid, but pot one is loaded with.
The only reason I don't want to play Atletico Madrid is because I feel like it'll be boring.
Yes, there are potentially some pretty boring matchups in here, but
also if we don't sign Saul and then he has like a good game against us, we're never gonna not hear that on Twitter, and it's gonna be obnoxious.
Yeah, that might be more annoying than watching the game, actually.
Truly. Truly the worst. Yeah.
But, like, Saul doesn't fit us in any way, shape, or form. Like, that's the problem with him. It's like, good, okay, but not really the player we need. And at a certain point, instead of just signing a midfielder because he's there, like, you should be trying to sign a midfielder because he's the right fit. And everybody's going to be like, well, who do you suggest? And whenever I say this, people go, well, who do you suggest? And I'm like, I don't know, because I'm not a scout. And my kind of feeling is if I do know of the player, like, then he's just expensive, et cetera. And we have scouts. And, like, any team that we poach a player from, they all these teams, Leicester, the French clubs, they seem to replace them pretty easily. So we got to, like, why not find that guy? Like, we don't need a world-class midfielder to come in. We need just someone, like, up. This is a bad comparison because right now we rate Michael Carrick so highly, but at the time that Michael Carrick played, no one really liked him.
At the time he was signed, too, he was the Roy Keane midfield replacement, and people were not high on Michael Carrick.
And for, I mean, look, he couldn't get into the England team when he was exactly what England needed because people just didn't rate him at the time. And now people appreciate what he did. But I remember people just being like, Carrick's peaks and valleys are just too similar that even when he plays bad, it's not a disaster. But when he plays well, it's like nothing special. And it's like, no, but Michael Carrick sat in a team with Wayne Rooney and Ronaldo and Giggs and said, I'm just going to do my job so that these players, I don't need to be the best one on the pitch. I just need to do my job well so that these players can go and be really good. And that's all we need. We don't need a big name. We need someone who could come in and do that job so that Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba and Jadon Sancho can go and do what they do best. And right now we don't have anybody that allows them to do that except for Paul Pogba when you play Paul Pogba deep. But then you have the defensive issues and then you don't have Paul Pogba further up the pitch. So just bring in someone, damn it. Doesn't have to be expensive. The French clubs desperately need money. And there's so many midfielders there that can move the ball.
My prediction for the Wolves game, in case you're still looking for those, is I have a new meme. I have, you know, ready to go for if Martial has another stinker. It's from the film Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I will let you just figure out what that might be.
I can't imagine Martial starting this game.
He was Martial FC down bad right now.
Yeah. So friend of the show, Carl Anko, was talking about this on Talk of the Devils, the episode that came out Monday. And he was talking about how much Ole clearly likes Martial and will like bring up these other reasons as to why he might not be performing up to, you know, expectation. But, you know, it is kind of getting to the point now where the clock's probably ticking. And, you know, I love Anthony Martial I have really high hopes for him, but I don't know if the number nine is going to be taken too much longer.
We all know what he needs to do.
I wrote about this in the tactical analysis, but I also, Carl had a tweet that summed it all up in that you could see that Ollie clearly wants, or he realized there's more value in trying to get Martial going than to just sit and exile him and wait for a suitor to randomly appear, because they're not. Nobody's coming in to try to buy Anthony Martial this year. So you are in a situation. I completely understand the logic behind signing Martial. Starting Martial against Southampton. I may not agree with it, but I understand the logic. You're trying to get him going. And because at a certain point, look, yes, Mason Greenwood might jump him in the pecking order, and Edinson Cavani is currently ahead of him in that striker's pecking order. But if you know anything about the human body and about if you look at Cavani's last season and how he's only gotten older, you can bank on the fact that Edinson Cavani is going to get hurt this year. And you don't want to run Mason Greenwood into the ground. So at times you're going to need Anthony Martial to play. And this is a difficult time because it's August. There's no League Cup matches. Do you want to leave him out for three games? And then you go off on an international break and then you come back and he's left out again. Then it's the Champions League. And are you going to leave him out that long or just give him sporadic sub appearances here and there? Like, that's not really going to get him going. So you have to give him something. And the hope was last season, Martial did all the things you want a striker to be doing in Ollie's system, except score goals. But he did all the other things off the ball and on the ball. And it was, when you look at his historical finishing, his conversion rate historically, he's a very good finisher. So as long as you keep doing all those things that the coach wants you to do, the finishing should come back. And he started them against Southampton and he did none of that. He was one of those. He wasn't bad. He was irrelevant players. And it didn't even look like it was going to click. So I get it. You want to get him going because it's at a certain point this season, you're going to need him and you don't want to bring him up cold, but wow, he did not do anything to justify being in the 11 next week. And it's hard to see Ollie putting him there, especially when you factor that Jadon Sancho will start.
I think too, Mason Greenwood is so good at scoring goals and shooting in general that it's kind of to the point now where if you are bringing in the creator of the level of Jadon Sancho, you kind of can't leave Mason Greenwood out by putting Sancho in that right wing position. You're going to put Greenwood at center forward if that's the case.
Yeah, and we saw what ended up happening against Southampton was United were kind of in this skewed diamond or a rhombus or box, attacking defending box where Pogba
trapezoid?
Not a trapezoid because it was four sides.
Oh, yeah. I was bad at geometry. Don't worry about me.
But basically what ended up happening was because Pogba was dropping and kind of becoming an extra midfielder, Martial was like a left striker and Greenwood was like a right striker. So it was like, oh, Martial could drift in the left channels and Greenwood could drift into the right channels, which is where they like to operate. But it's not because they when they were good at those roles, it's when they are on the right and on the left and they come inward. And by playing them as right and left strikers, centrally, it was now we're asking them to go outwards. And we saw a lot of times Bruno would play balls in towards Greenwood or Pogba to Martial, and Fred had one to Martial where it was down into the channels, but now they had to go get it. And in order to come back to them, to get it on their strong foot, they had to cut back into the middle. And Southampton just took that away from them. So it wasn't very useful. So, yeah, if you put on Jadon Sancho, he'll maybe hold that width on the right more and let Greenwood operate as just central. So you could play the ball to Greenwood in the left, which is what we saw them do against Leeds. And against Leeds, he had it on his strong foot. So even though the angle was tight, he's like, I've got a freaking rocket on my left foot and I can shoot from here. I don't have to worry about cutting it back to get it onto my left foot. And I think that'll make it more dynamic, which is it's just Greenwood's shown enough in that two striker formation to say maybe it can work with him. It's not ideal. Martial, whenever we have used him there over the last 3 years, has shown nothing. Rashford's shown a little bit as a right striker to say, okay, not ideal, but I can do this. And Greenwood, although Rashford and Greenwood, you end up with the same problems, one on the left and one on the right, and they end up on their wrong foot, which we saw against Leipzig last year. But yeah, it's hard to imagine how you drop Mason Greenwood right now, and you've got to get Jadon Sancho into this team. And Anthony Martial, you're going to get your substitute appearances, but until you really go on and start making yourself undroppable, it's going to be hard for you to get into the team.
Yeah.
It should be noted too that a trapezoid does have four sides. I looked it up. It's just that only two sides are parallel, not all four sides.
You're right. Now I'm thinking of behind the NHL goal.
Bang, bang.
Nathan is good at geometry. Plot twist. Well, he's good when he has Google.
Geometry is my best subject in high school. My best math subject in high school.
Oh, I don't think I was good enough at any math subject for it to qualify as best.
C is for commencement, baby.
C's get degrees. All right, I guess that's it. We'll see you tomorrow after we find out what our Champions League group is. So thanks for listening.